Good morning again. Tim's instructions this morning were painfully clear. He said it better be an hour and a half or else. So let me waffle on at the beginning for a little bit. At Islington, just to drive the people nuts, we've got a new tradition since I came. Every Sunday when the Knights win, we wear our Knights jerseys to church. And it drives some people nuts, and other people wear their Knights jerseys. And that helps me work out which people at church I like and which I will pray for.
So did they win this week?
They did. I was provided with the password after yesterday's talk, and I got to see the last 4 minutes in which four guys were sent off for fighting. A member of the crowd was ejected for throwing a football at one of the Knights players, and the Knights won, so it was a solid 4 minutes. So, quick question for a couple of you. If you could be, for a moment, anyone, who would you be and why? Just shout it out.
I'd like to be Pastor Tim. Because he's thinner than I am. Oh.
I knew his good looks had come into it. Who else?
In that case, I wouldn't want to be Pastor Tim's wife because.
How quickly did that go weird?
Really quick.
I'm just going to move on. I support the Knights. I know when we've lost. So, some guys are theologians, some are great preachers, some are great teachers. I'm like a chef. So, like I said, we're just making this bit of a Jesus fruit salad. We're just chucking bits and pieces in that hopefully will make a nice fruit salad and hopefully vaguely have something to do with following Jesus. And so today I want to ask a particular question, like, what do people who follow Jesus wear? What do they look like? How do you look around the crowd? How do you pick out the people who follow Jesus? So, hopefully this goes a bit better. Because interaction is always terrible. What does, say, for example, what does an emo girl look like? That's safe because there's none here. What's an emo girl look like?
Fringe.
Yeah? They got that special fringe. It's probably dyed like... Anyway, I'm not... Yeah. And she's got pale skin and she wears dark colours. What's a metrosexual guy look like?
They smell bad.
No, they smell bad. And they wash their man bun 17 times a day. That's, not a metrosexual. What does a real man look like?
Brandon.
Is that Brandon? Do you want to do a little fashion show? No, because real men don't do that rubbish, do they? Okay. Heaps of stereotypes. What does a copper look like? Donut. I don't know what it looks like, but he's got a donut in his hand, doesn't he? So, what does it look like to be a Jesus follower? I want you to, if you've got a pencil, you've got to write it down. If not, use your brain. I want you to write down 5 words off the top of your head, really, really quickly, that describe what it looks like to follow Jesus. 5 words that describe what it looks like to follow Jesus. You got 20 seconds. 20. 19. 18. It's like the shot clock to take the kick on. Eleven, ten, No. Five, four, three. You can keep writing and thinking why I talk. I actually sometimes get in a bit of a mess with this, particularly at some little bit older churches. What does it look like to be a Jesus follower? You know, do I have to wear a tie to church? When I went to Islington the first time a year ago, it was my inauguration or whatever they call that thing. I was the only guy without a tie, and I thought, uh-oh, it's not starting well. Maybe I shouldn't wear a tie. Maybe I should wear sandals because Jesus wore sandals. If I follow Jesus, is it all right to skip the Sunday service to go to the night's game? Or is that a bad thing to do? One of my personal struggles. Is it okay, as a Jesus follower, is it okay to laugh at the Sunday service? Because I have a lot of trouble at Islington. Either I'm not funny, or there is a rule that says you can't laugh. Because at Islington, we don't laugh. That is sad, because I'm hilarious. My wife tells me all the time. Actually, not that's what she says. Sorry?
I went with I'm not funny. Oh.
I don't know what's happening, but I feel like one of my little feelings is hurt. Let's open the Bible, because Jesus loves me. Actually, grab a Bible, Matthew chapter 5. The Sermon on the Mount, as far as I can tell, the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' description of what he wants his followers to look like. Matthew was a mate of Jesus. He was one of the disciples, and he kindly wrote this description down for us to read. So you should go home. You've got to go home. You've got to read the whole sermon, but we're going to read just a little bit at the beginning. And as we go through, and I worked out that Tim's much better at Greek than me this morning. As we go through, we're going to look at one word. And I'm probably not saying it right, but one word in the Greek, it's called makarios. Because I think it's a word that makes a big difference. So, Matthew chapter 5, verse 1. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and he sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. So our setting is, we've got Jesus, he's up on this big hill, and it kind of reminds us of something. If you're a Bible guy or a Bible girl, it kind of reminds you of something you've seen before. The scene kind of reminds us of the day back a bit when Moses was up on the hill and gave the law to Israel on Mount Sinai. So it's almost like this is a moment of similar importance, that something of Moses giving the law on Mount Sinai significance is about to happen. And so he begins to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you, says Jesus, when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." As I read through that, I just think to myself, this is seriously astounding. What does it look like to follow Jesus? Jesus, he's given us the big, like Mount Sinai speech. What does it look like to follow Jesus? It looks, happy. It looks blessed. How do blessed people look? Are they kind of a bit happier? They're kind of happy. How does it look to follow Jesus? It looks blessed. It looks happy. Jesus followers are meant to be happy and joyous and alive and vibrant and fun and playful because they are made happy by God Himself. And that's what blessed means. It means made happy by God. And poverty and persecution and mourning cannot take that away from them, says Jesus, because they've been made happy by God in a way that is independent of circumstances. Now I want you to quickly look at those five words you wrote down a minute ago. When Jesus thinks about the people who are following him, the first thing he thinks about is happy. Who had happy on their list? Oh man. There's heaps of you. I'm just going to give up on the sermon. I thought I was going to tell you something you didn't know. So 7 or 8 people. That's fantastic. And when I think it through, it's so cool. It's so amazing. It's so astounding. It's so encouraging that this is the first thing that Jesus says about his followers. They are blessed, made happy by God. Actually, I won't give up. I think I can do a bit better. Let me run through this again. We'll read it again. Back to the beginning. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and he sat down. His disciples, that's that word we talked about yesterday, his followers came to him. And he began to teach them and he said, blessed, 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 9 times. And you've guessed this already, the Greek word here for blessed is the word makarios. I don't know if that's how you say it, it's how it's spelt, makarios. And blessed is a good translation, but the Greek word is a bit richer, it's a bit fuller than our word blessed. When we hear the word blessed, for a whole bunch of reasons, we tend to think of blessed as in God blessing us. But that's part of what Jesus is getting at, but that's maybe not the main thing Jesus is getting at. The Greek word makarios means someone who is to be congratulated. Like Medali. Someone who's to be congratulated. Someone, and this is the definition I really like, someone whose place in life is an enviable one. Someone whose place in life is an enviable one. So who do you wish you could be? Most of us have someone. We say to ourselves, you know what, if I could just be so-and-so, if I could just be like them, if I could just live their life, if I could just be so-and-so, then I'd be happy. And to be honest, my life is pretty good. I have a great wife. She's put up with me for 25 years. I have wonderful kids. They never rebelled. I can trust them. They're not perfect, but we have no hassles. We have enough, you know, I've been in a few get-rich-quick schemes and not got rich, and so we're not rich, but we have enough money to get by. But you know what? You know what? If I could just be one of the guys from Top Gear, before Jeremy Clarkson stuffed it up, if I could just be one of the guys from Top Gear, then I'd be happy. Because think of their life, those guys to get to drive expensive, high-powered cars all over the world. And they get to drive them like they stole them. Bit of a scrape, bit of a blown tire, who cares? When Richard Hammond smashes it up, someone else pays for that $400,000 motor car. And the whole time they're living this adventure all over the world, driving fancy cars, they are getting paid big money to do it. Their Makarios, their place in life, is to be envied. If I could just be like them, I'd be happy. The Mythbusters. Darn those guys. They had to blow up pretty much everything you can think of. They've blown it up. And again, they get paid big money to blow up stuff. Their place in life is, it's Makarios. Those guys are fortunate. They are well off. They are to be congratulated. Their place in life is an enviable Makarios one. And it drove me nuts that most people read what we just read. We call it the Beatitudes. Most people read it and they come away with a list of rules. A list of rules that have got to be kept or else God is angry. It's like this big game of Jesus says. Jesus says, do this. Jesus says, do this. Jesus says, do this. And it's this miserable, nasty, religious thing. Jesus says, be meek or else be mournful, be hungry. But if that's what, when you read the Beatitudes, if you get out of it a list of rules, you've missed the point of what Jesus is trying to communicate. Jesus is making this astounding claim. This astounding claim that those who follow him are Makarios. Blessed are, fortunate are, well off are, to be congratulated are those who follow Jesus. Their place in life is an enviable one. Back to Jesus' speech, verse 13. He keeps going. He says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And you've heard this talk before, you know all about it. Salt's a preservative, right? So you've got a nice, great big hunk of meat, and it's about to go bad, and you salt it, and it stays good. And Jesus says, you're salt. And sometimes we say, well, actually, Jesus, you know, if it's all right with you, I just thought I'd come to church occasionally and then go to heaven with when I die, if that's all right with you. And Jesus is like, no. You're salt. And verse 14, you're light. You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. So salt preserves and light shows the way. Well, again, Jesus, you know, don't actually want to show anyone the way because I'm a bit introverted and I don't actually like people that much and I don't play that well with others. And really, back at home, I got a sink to unclog, and that's going to take probably all afternoon. Really, I just like to come to church occasionally and then go to heaven when I die. And Jesus said, no. That's not what it looks like. You are salt. You are light. Verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And here's the big Jesus thing. Jesus invites us to live a Makarios life, a life to be envied, a life where confidence in Jesus is so big that it overwhelms fear, to live a life that is so Makarios that it gets other people thinking. To live a generous, merciful life in a 9/11 Manchester bombing, school shooting, pay your mortgage now or else type world, that gets people thinking. Man, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? No one is that generous. No one is that merciful. No one is that kind and loving. What's up with that guy? No one is that generous. And it's not my fancy car or my fat wallet or my handsome looks that's supposed to capture people's attention. It's my love one another, Makarios life that is meant to capture other people's attention. And so Jesus invites us to live this Makarios, salt and light life that captures the attention of Morissette and points Morissette to our Father in heaven. Jesus invites us to live this Makarios, salt and life life that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And I've been tested. I'm wildly introverted. I really don't like people. They drain me. I kind of have low self-esteem. As I look back over my life, I've failed at more things than I've succeeded at. I've pastored a number of churches, and you know what? With the exception of one, they've all grown when I left. And so there's a part of me that says, no one's going to notice you and glorify God. Most people don't notice me. Most people don't take me seriously. And maybe you feel similar in your own way. But you and I have more influence than we think. Jesus said, think of our setting again. Jesus said this stuff. To a ragtag bunch of hillbilly peasants in a backwall bogan place that had about as much world significance as Tasmania. They didn't think they were going to change the world. In fact, most of the world hadn't even been discovered back when these guys were around. But you know what? This ragtag bunch of bogans embraced their role as salt and light, and today there are churches on continents those guys didn't even know existed. Those hillbillies, that ragtag bunch of fishermen embraced their role as salt and light, and today there's a church at Morissette. And those guys like Matthew and John and the disciples, they're like, what? Morissette? Where's Morissette? And you're like, oh, in Australia. And they're like, where's Australia? Like, because of them, there are churches at places they've never even heard of. And friends, when you live an ordinary, love one another, Makarios, salt and light life, you have more influence than you think. A number of years ago, I was working at Gordon Baptist, and there's this young Japanese girl. She'd come along occasionally to our English language school that the church had. And you could tell just by looking at her in a crowd that she was lonely and sad. She just had that hangdog expression on her face. And so at the morning teas between classes, I started to go and speak to her. And it turns out she worked for a family from a culture that didn't have much time for Japanese people. And though she was an au pair and just supposed to work a few hours a day, look after kids, they basically treated her as a slave 24/7. And so she was in a different country. She was being treated poorly and she just felt bad and lonely. And so because of the boy-girl thing, I grabbed another young lady, Sarah. Sarah was one of the students at our church. And I said, hey, Sarah, let's take Ori to lunch. And that began a pattern where Sarah and I took Ori just for a sandwich after English classes for maybe 7 or 8 occasions. And it was just like, Sarah and I had lunch anyway, so what was one more person? And fast forward down the track, we're baptizing Ori about 9 months later. And when Ori was baptized, she stood up and she gave her testimony. And when she got up and she told a story, she went, oh my goodness, everyone, thank God for Matt and Sarah. When I needed someone, God provided Matt and Sarah. When I needed friends, God provided Matt and Sarah. When I had questions about Jesus, God provided Matt and Sarah. And they answered all my questions about Jesus. When I needed a hug and some love, God provided Sarah to give me a hug. And Sarah and I were looking at each other and kind of going, well, what? We just ate sandwiches with the lonely girl. And what was ordinary, plain and boring, love one another, turned out to be a Makarios, a salt and light moment in Ori's life. What was just ordinary, sharing ourselves with another human, was God's providence for Ori. What was no big deal to Sarah and I was the moment that changed Ori's eternity. Because Jesus got involved. And you and I, we have more influence than we think. There's a guy, I stalked him on Facebook. I couldn't find him. I presume he's still there somewhere. But Michael Booth, if I could find him, would not remember me. I remember him, but I doubt he remembers me. I doubt he remembers the words he said to me back in 1991. He was just plodding his way, living a love one another, Makarios, salt and light life. But 26 years later, I vividly remember the words he spoke to an 18-year-old boy from the country, lost in the city and homesick the first time out of his parents' house. I remember his Makarios life because his Makarios life transformed my life. When Jesus got involved, you have more influence than you think. Sure, you can't influence everyone. But when you follow Jesus, here's the thing, when you follow Jesus, you do for one person what you wish you could do for everyone. Do for one what you wish you could do for many. When I was at Brookside, there was this family, the mum and dad were recovering heroin addicts. And they were, you know, living a bit of an iffy lifestyle, but they were clean. And they had two little girls. These two little girls were quite sweet, but they were still growing up in a trailer park. So they had a few things against them. They'd gotten involved in our church, and it came to a point where after many years, this family had scraped up enough sense to go on their first ever family holiday to the seaside. And so Les is telling me about it. He's like, yeah, we're going on the holidays, we're taking the kids to the ocean. And they lived in Muswellbrook, but the girls had never seen the water. And it's like, well, it's so exciting. And I thought to myself, they've got there's four of them, they've got this tiny Corolla. How are they gonna fit their junk in that? And so I said to him, I said, well, look, let's swap cars for the week. You can have my family car, my Commodore, and I'll have your Corolla, and I'll just make your trip easier. So we swapped cars, and off they went to the seaside. Monday morning, because Les had dropped his car at my house and then picked up mine, and Monday morning I've got into the car, and the house I used to live in, you drive out my drive, and you drive up this big hill. And then you start to go down the other side. And so I went up the hill, and I went to go down the other side. When I maybe drive too quick, when I got to the bottom of the hill, I put my foot on the brake, and nothing happened. The car had no brakes. And when I'd like nearly died but not died, and nearly smashed someone else's car but didn't smash their car, I kind of thought to myself, I thought, oh my goodness, how can you guys drive your precious little girls around in this car with no brakes? And so I went into work, and there's a real practical guy, helped me build my yellow car, real practical guy called Bruce. And I went over to Bruce's house and I said, Bruce, man, we got to look at this car. We got to fix the brakes. And so Bruce put his stuff down, and we crawled under the car, and it's like, oh, there's no fixing these brakes. And so what we decided to do was, Bruce and I and our wives, we went out and we did a bit naughty. We traded in his car and we bought a new car. And when they came back from holidays, the family came to my place to pick up their car, and it wasn't there. I was like, well, look, sorry guys, your car was a death trap, so we got you this one. And the thing is, I'm not rich enough to buy everyone a car. But following Jesus, when you're salt and light, you do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And it frustrates me, because so often churches don't act because they can't solve the whole problem. Sometimes people like you and I, we hold back because the problem seems too big and too complex and too difficult. Oh, whoa, oh no, there's so much poverty. Oh no, look, there's so many depressed people. Oh no, there's so many refugees. There's nothing I can do. Well, no, sure, there's something you can do. Feed one hungry person. Help one depressed person. Open your house to one refugee family. When you read the scriptures, it's really amazing. When you read the gospels particularly, you realize that not even Jesus himself helped everyone. Jesus didn't heal everyone lying on the ground at the pool of Bethsaida. But he did for one what he wished he could do for everyone. And what he will do one day in the future for everyone. But for now, he did for one what he wished he could do for everyone. And in the ecclesia, in the gathering with a purpose, you do for one what you wish you could do for all, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And friends, maybe you're bored, I don't know, maybe you need coffee, but this Macarius thing, it just blows me away. Because when I think about it, we don't have to be Macarius. It's not a rule we're told to do. We don't have to live this enviable life, or else we get to live this life, which is astounding. We get to be Macarius. We get to influence other people's lives for the better. Sadly, most people, when they start to follow Jesus, they've got this weird religious idea that when you follow Jesus, you've got to give everything up. You've got to stop having fun, because, whoa, Jesus is not into fun. If you're going to be a Jesus follower, you have to give up fun and life and adventure and good times. There's this rule in religion. There's this rule in religion that's always been there, and it will always be there. And the rule says, you know what? You've got to be serious and somber and sour to follow God. But if you're serious and somber and dour and miserable and religious, then you've completely failed. You've completely missed the point. We've totally missed the heart and soul of what Jesus is telling us following him looks like. And friends, I'm not quite Martin Luther, but I have a dream. I look forward to a day when there's a horrific Facebook storm. I look forward to the day when the religious people start storming out of churches all over the country because we're having too much fun at church. I look forward to the day when the religious people storm out because we're having too much fun and all the irreligious people start sneaking in to have a look because they think that maybe, just maybe, we've got a joy that they don't have. I look forward to the day when I get on Facebook and people are criticizing Morissette Baptist Church on Facebook because they're not serious enough. They have too much fun. There's too much life and too much vibrancy and too much Macarius. And that's it can't be right. Say the religious people. But blessed are, says Jesus, happy are, content are, to be envied are, Macarius are, those who know that Jesus died and rose again for them, and who've committed their life to following him. Let me pray. Father God, I know that in my personal life, so often it looks like a shadow of the Macarius salt and light life that you called me to. It distresses me that sometimes the church looks like those four words we spoke about the other day. Judgmental, irrelevant, boring. How great would it be if Macarius was what stood out about your church? How life-giving would it be, how salty, how light would it be if people looked at your followers, if they looked at the church, if they saw our lives lived with you and they thought, whoa, their lives are Macarius, they're to be envied. those people are to be congratulated. The lives they live with Jesus are just amazing. And how astounding would it be if people in this community saw our Macarius life and then praised our Father in heaven for giving us that life. In Jesus' precious name, we pray. Amen.